Welcome along to the Big Red Bench. Dan Casey here with you for the next hour or so. Plenty to get through on today's show. The Grand National winner being ridden by Cork jockey Paul Townend. Leinster playing what feels like Cork in the Aviva at the moment, with Ron Nogueira's La Rochelle facing them after they spent the week down here. That one is 10-3 in Leinster's favour at the moment. Cork City's women team, they drew against DLR Waves today. Another team who played in Belfield, of course, yesterday was the men's team, who drew themselves but against UCD. Now, earlier, I had the absolute pleasure of speaking to City midfielder Barry Coffey. I don't know that either of us expect the chat to go on for 17 minutes, but it was highly enjoyable. We're delighted to be joined here on the Big Red Bench by Cork City's one and only Barry Coffey. Barry, how are you, first of all?
Yeah, good, thanks very much. Not too bad after last night, so all good.
Barry, from your own point of view, what do you make that? Is it 2 points dropped, or is it just 1 point gained?
I suppose you probably would have to say 2 points dropped. Being realistic about it, although UCD are, they're probably the second best team in the league in terms of football wise, they always have that, freedom to go and play and kind of nothing to lose and little expectation, which makes them really dangerous and really good, and especially up there, it's a pretty kind of pre-season, dull place to go.
Mm-hmm.
So, from them, that point of view, we're probably happy with the points. Performance overall, probably just about okay with it, happy with another clean sheet. But overall, it's got to be looked at as 2 points dropped. We want to be beating everyone, regardless of how good they are or where they are, where they play. We want to be beating them.
Yeah, is there more of an emphasis on defending and defence this year, Barry?
I suppose, look, when you get a new staff and a whole new team together, the first thing you've got to do is make yourself hard to beat. You've got to put that foundation, that block in place. You can't really start from an attacking point of view and start just trying to score from, let's say, as a collective straight away, and then you're leaking goals. The other end, it kind of works where you've got to set the formation, as in you've got to put that foundation and blocks down as being a really good defensive unit as a team, not just a back four. And then once you've got that kind of, just got to put that foundation block in place at the back to allow you to go and be really dangerous and attacking in the final third. So just probably what we've worked on, because, as I said, it's a whole new staff, a new group, and you do have to start at the back, and it's important. If you don't, goals will win you games, but clean sheets will win you leagues. So I suppose it's more so that was the main emphasis at the start. It's been really hard to beat and being a really good, solid block, whether that's a high block or low block, wherever. And I suppose now it's time to build off that and not just be known for clean sheets, but also being known as a team that can score a lot of goals with a lot of quality.
Yeah, and how did you see your own game going last night, Barry?
Yeah, I've kind of, if you look back at 2 years ago, if we're going to go off that with us being in the first division, my role was a lot different in a way, but very similar. There was games in that season where I probably scored one or two goals and genuinely probably didn't affect the game that much in terms of, my other qualities and being in open play. And then there was probably games in that season, mind you, there was probably only a few, but where I didn't score and I probably didn't affect the game, which was something that my main emphasis was to score. But if I didn't score, I felt like I was kind of not really bringing much to it. And
yeah.
I spoke with him now, and he's given me that license that it's not just about scoring goals for me. I have that quality and I'll always manage to get in the box and find myself in good opportunities in good areas. But it's been consistently performing well, which is something I wanted to do. It's something where I feel like when I'm doing that is where I'm at my best. And since I've kind of come back, I know it was a hiccup with the red card, but I've consistently kind of performed well. Don't get me wrong, I'm certainly not over the moon with it, but just consistently being in the game, it's not just moments or second balls or goals. It's actually, of course, goals is the most important thing, but it's just always being consistent in the game, making things happen, being on the ball, good areas, you know, that kind of way. So it's kind of new to me in a way, but also really enjoyable. And I feel like as games have gone on, I've started to impact games more and more, not just by goals, but just by my performance. And I'm just trying to build off that. But that's kind of where I'm at with it, is trying to consistently perform well overall.
Yeah, we're a quarter of the season done now. What changes, or what are the main changes that you've seen within the team since Tim has come in?
Where do you start? You've got a whole new 11 in a funny way. In terms of young lads that come through the academy, you've got the likes of Colin Jaden coming through, and then you've obviously signed some really good players in Charles and Jacko, and then just big changes are starting to form, where we're trying to nail down a full-on philosophy with the ball, trying to be a team where you can exactly see what we're trying to do. We're not really, not that you're off the cuff can be a good thing and it can be dangerous as well, but trying to put a kind of blueprint in place and then mould off that from game to game. And there was moments, I suppose Cove, we were really good on a terrible pitch, but there was moments last night where we were really good as well, not for 90 minutes, but you could see we're trying to implement it. These things do take time, and I like that. When you've got new staff and new players and basically a whole new building in terms of people in it, these things do take time. But the difference is, I suppose, just it's a new era, you could say, and everyone's trying to get on with what Tim's trying to implement with us and perform that for 90 minutes, not just for 15-20 minute spells in games.
I know the media answer will be we don't pay attention, but is the league table something that you look at all, and you're kind of looking now and other teams are probably going to pick up bogey results here and there? You know, you'll have the likes of Finn Arps, they'll probably lose to Athlone Town and things like that. Is that something you pay attention to at all, what's happening further down below?
No, like, as cliche as it sounds, it's really not. It's still very early in the season in terms of to be looking at a league table. Don't get me wrong, you want to be on top, and we always want to keep stay there, obviously, but keep making that gap as big as we can. But I think we're trying to just look after ourselves. We've got a really important probably next 6 to 8 weeks coming up, and look, come the mid-season break and after that, is more so when you probably start looking at points to the stage of like, right, where are we and what are other teams doing, or, you know, coming into that business end. But for now, there's no good that will come off worrying about other teams' results or other teams' performances or whatnot. We've got to just look after ourselves and pick up as much points as we can and at performative levels we can, week in, week out. And then, you know, come, as I said, that business end of the season, we probably hopefully we'll be in a really good position that we won't have to be looking up the table. We'll just have to keep looking forward and keep trying to push on.
I know it's only the first division, but a Cork City Invincible team certainly has a nice ring to it.
It does. Yeah, it would be nice. It would be a full 360 from last year. You can put it that way, but
that's where we lost every game.
Why not? Look, we're going to go. It's not something that, look, Invincible, geez, you mean, it's not something we're trying to do in terms of, it's not the first thing Tim says every morning to us, but like, certainly every game we go into, we want to win, and we've got to bring that kind of, it's not arrogance, but that just kind of confidence to it. And that's something that Tim's been brilliant at as well. Don't get me wrong, confidence was a big thing for us last year, and certainly that was something that we've had to slowly but surely bring back into us this year. So we'll go into every game confident, and if it happens, it happens, but look, game by game, and we've got to get better at performing for 90 minutes, and then things will look after themselves.
Was there a time last night you maybe sat in and were happy enough to take the draw rather than going for the win, or was it a case of you were going for the win for the full 90-95 minutes?
No, absolutely not. Whether it looked like it or not, I think that's something that Tim's really pushed on us, and on us as kind of players and kind of, let's say, older and more experienced players. I genuinely had no hair. I think there'll probably never be a time where we'll do that this year. It's not what we're trying to make our DNA like. If you look at last night, Tim has no issue taking off, like, took off Jacko, he's our top scorer, took off me, took off Hoop Bagsy. You know, on you go, Jaden, Josh, Nate came on. Like, they're not substitutions that are, right, we'll take this and just get, like, take the draw or not. There are substitutions going, them boys are tired. I've got a squad of players here. We bring on Muzz last night. He got serious quality there, and it's like bringing on boys to go and win the game for us. It's not young lads coming on to just get an appearance or experience. They're coming on with the expectation that you've got to come on and change the game and win the game for us. Like, that's 100% the message. And they did, they didn't win the game, but they made an impact. They freshened us up. We kind of finished the game. It looked like there was kind of only one team pushing for that winner, and that's just the mentality that we're trying to get. No matter what, we're going to win every game, regardless of what minute or how the game's going.
Yeah, just a word, I suppose, Barry. What's it like training with two supreme talents in Jaden Uma and Cathal O'Sullivan?
What was that? What's it like?
Yeah.
Really, really good. It's refreshing. You know, it is refreshing. I know it's cliche, but having a good squad is so important because it makes training so much better. Having new players and new signings, and like, they're basically two new signings in terms of they've just come up to the first team. Having them in around it, it lifts everyone in terms of performance. Everyone's battling for positions, and when people are battling for positions, it makes training better, which makes us perform better on a Friday night. And the two boys are quality; they really are. They're young. You've got to give them a little bit of leeway in terms of they're still learning. Like, you can't expect them to know them, but in terms of talent, you see Carl last night. He's just dangerous. Like he probably should have. Is it a penalty? It looks like it to me. If not, it's a tapping for him. You see the kind of threat he brings, and then you bring Jaden on. He's just a nightmare. He's 16, and the stride on the lad is unbelievable. Like, you know, he's so quick, and he's built so well. He can finish. He can hold it up. He's everything you're kind of looking for. But you've just got to give him time. But in terms of quality and excitement that you can get off him, and the boost they give a team, and the kind of fear they bring to other teams is unbelievable, and exactly what we need and we miss. So it is a joy to see them out there with us, and they're not just there by talking to Jester.
What was it like playing in Turner's Cross on that pitch against Cove?
Yeah, pull off one, I suppose, if you want to put it that way. it was mad, to be honest. It was just so soft, you could see a couple of times where you're just, you know, taking a touch and it's just like stuck in the ground, like, and you're basically running over the ball thinking it's going to come with you, and it's especially down that kind of right side where the dugout is. It was really soft, but sure, look, it is what it is. Like, it obviously the weather doesn't help, but funny enough, we played probably our best 90 minutes performance we've had all year on it, so I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing.
I know, because we keep getting told that all the better ground now in summer will suit us, and we get the most goals we got all season.
Yeah, typical. That's just typical, isn't it? But I think, look, if we could pick, we definitely pick a harder ground where you can kind of get a bit of zip on the ball. But I thought we performed really well. It was nice to bounce back after kind of that Monday against Wexford. So to come back with a 90-minute strong performance was really pleasing, and score, you know, three goals. But I think if you had hit five or six there, no one would have bat an eyelid either. So we left a couple behind, but also it was nice to score and get some, I suppose, a good scoreline on the board in a Cork derby, which is always nice.
Do you have any insider info for us on what's happening with Turner's Cross? So are we homeless for the next while?
See, to be honest, I really don't know. I don't know what the story is with it. Turner's Cross is obviously in bits the other night, but, like, if we're going to be honest, like, Turner's Cross has been a bitch for a year and a half without being, do you know what, when I say, mm-hmm. say it like that, it's, when I first came, the pitch was really, really nice, like, it was really nice. I think I heard, was it 15-16 or 16-78, got like best pitch in the country or something like that as well, but whatever it is, it's just, it's even last year it was still quite poor. Obviously it was nowhere near now it's near the night, but you know, it hasn't really been that great at all since then, you know. But in terms of the next few weeks, I don't know. We've got Longford next. The talks of that obviously being transferred now, just reverse fixture that we go play there, and then Harps the following week back up there. So that's like, I only know as much as he in terms of, I think that I see the rumours or what the plan is, but I certainly know that I'm not going to be in Turner's Cross for a while.
Yeah,
which is disappointing. Like,
would four away games in a row be a massive deal for the squad, or think you'll be well capable of dealing with it?
You know, it's four away games for anyone's tough, and if you look probably at the travel and that, it's not an excuse. We've probably not performed as well or picked up as much points as we'd like to on the road, so it's going to be important, a really important part of our season. If it does, man, if it is the case that we do have to go away for 4 or 5 weeks on the road, that we do it, go and try and get on day of doing it, and it would really set us up. You know, we'll reap the reward if we can go put on a really good, a good solid month of performance come the end of the season or the kind of latter end of it, when we've got probably a backup of games at home. That would really stand us as well. So it's good timing in a way. We've got a really strong squad now. Muzz is obviously back. You've got Malik. I don't think he's far away. Maybe only another couple of weeks or what. Then you have Darragh Crowley back. Bagsy. Everyone's kind of getting really fit. So the strong is as healthy as it has been. So I'm sure we'll have to rotate it a bit with the travel. But, you know, it's no excuse if we can go and, as I said, get unscathed with the next kind of 5-6 weeks. It would really give us a good platform to push on.
Fair play, Barry. Thanks so much for the call, man. Appreciate it.
No worries, man. That's all good. You look after yourself.
What an absolute legend is Barry Coffey. Bad news for Manchester United fans. Bournemouth 2, Man United 1. Not good times in Old Trafford at the moment, but at least they have the Liverpool Never Beat Them trophy. Now, sticking with the League of Ireland, John O'Shea was there for us in Coleman's Park last night as Cove Ramblers lost 2-4 to Wexford, and John caught up with the Ramblers gaffer, Gary Hunt.
Gary, just if you look at the division as a whole, really, the teams are kind of taking points off each other. Every single game is kind of hard to call. But given kind of how open is the results are, how kind of even though one or two results, one or two wins, you could see like a club, you said, any club in the playoffs, really. So like, from that kind of point of view, you're kind of one or two results always from the kind of.
Yeah, look, I can't speak on behalf of other teams, but as I say, there's a little bit of a trend where everyone seems to be taking points off everybody, so maybe that keeps us a little bit in check with the rest of the pack, you know. But we can't rely on that. We can't rely on the opposition teams doing us favours, you know. We have to start doing it for ourselves, you know. We're going to have a good hard look at ourselves this week and make sure that come next week in training we do the business that makes us harder to beat next Friday.
Yeah, and in terms of getting a win or a couple of more wins as well on the board, do you think it's kind of is it far away in terms of getting a consistent kind of positive on results here? Something, or
look, it's a new squad this season, and you know, as a staff, we're new in the door as well, so we're trying too hard, I'm not sure, but everyone wants the best for Cove Ramblers, and we're trying to find that, and it's going to take us a couple of games, as we said at the start of the season, but that's not us making excuses for results. We want results to be fixed, but the sooner we're better we can do that as a group. But as I said, we won't stop till we find that.
And stick with it, stick with the process, and hold it, as the season goes on as well, that to know like more the extra support ball wins will hopefully come on the board as the season goes on.
Yeah, and as you said there, like stick with us. The fans are really important to us. They'll drag these lads along. And look, as I said, it's hard to take tonight, you know, and we'll make sure that there's not a repeat of that. We're gonna work hard next week in training and look at Finn Harps and look at how we can bounce back. But as I said, the fans are crucial to that. The fans are crucial to have next Friday here. We need them behind us because, as I said earlier, we want to focus on getting ourselves ahead in games and we want to get them off their seats. But when we're chasing games, it's hard for us to do that.
Yeah, hopefully Ramblers can pick up some steam. Back to the Premier League, as mentioned earlier, Bournemouth have restored their lead over Man United in the late game this evening. Alan Seabrook has the latest from the Vitality.
But it's now Bournemouth 2, Manchester United 1, having clawed their way back into the game with a goal from Fernandes. Bournemouth are back in the lead. A goal on 36 minutes. Kluivert away down the left-hand side, cut in on his right foot, smashed it past Onana at the near post. It's Bournemouth 2, United 1.
Now, during the week, Ireland's women's team lost 2-0 to England at the Aviva. Here's Cork's Denise O'Sullivan speaking after the defeat.
Denise, how are you feeling after that?
Exhausted.
Absolutely. Caitlin said the same thing.
Yeah, it was an absolute shift and, yeah, obviously disappointed not to come away with any points from two of the games, but this is the level that we're at now and we have to stay positive. We had a go at them, but I think having without the ball for 90 minutes is mentally tiring, but we'll keep pushing on and we have a camp and a quick turnaround in another few weeks.
Talk us through your feelings on the pitch, because as we were just discussing with Caitlin, you know, that first half it did feel like they were giving us the runaround, but in the second half it was a totally different story. What was it like for you?
Yeah, in the first half, you're right, I think we were too deep and went in a half time, and Eileen, the staff, told us to push on, and I think we tend to do that in second halves where we have a right go at them and we created a few chances, but I didn't see much of the ball in the second half either, to be quite honest. Frustrating game for me, but just gotta keep going and gotta get back to my club and play another game on Saturday, so it's just non-stop go, but we'll come back in and we'll look forward to this weekend games.
It is really non-stop. Like, it was an intense game against France on Monday, and even more intense, I would probably say, out there today. And you said it was mentally quite difficult. As a squad, how do you adjust to that? Because 3 goals conceded isn't the worst, considering some of the opposition that we're up against, even though I know we don't like thinking of it that way.
Yeah, 100%. Look, there's other teams where they scored 5 or 6 against, so credit to our defenders. They're excellent, and they've always been brilliant for us. But yeah, we just have to get together again as a squad in a few weeks and just take the positives into the next games. That's all we can do, and try and stay positive ourselves and hopefully try getting points on the board in the next few games.
Is it a good thing that the camp isn't that far away the next one, because it means that there's not that much time to dwell on what happened and a chance and an opportunity for the team to get together again and kind of rebuild again?
I think so, yeah. We absolutely love being together, this team, and look, we're all excited to come back into the next camp as well, and I'm glad it's only a few weeks away, because as you said, we can't dwell in it, but we'd have to come back in and get straight to work again and just keep this campaign going.
So what's been the biggest learnings across these 2 games with their level of opposition?
Yeah, that we're up against world class players and we have to get there. I think as a nation, I think we're really good defensively, organised, and our structure has always been really good, but I think the next thing for us now is to get on the ball and what we can do with it, and we know we have to improve in that area, so we can learn from it and take them into next games.
In terms of on the ball, was it a little bit disappointing maybe that some of the short passes weren't going to feet, and when you were getting that sort of opportunity and that break that you just couldn't capitalise?
Yeah, 100%. It's definitely, of course, it's frustrating. Myself, I want to get on the ball all the time, so it's hard, but look, we know this is the level we're playing against now, and they're world-class players, world-class team, so we have to just take the positives and keep going, yeah.
When you look back at a game like this, going into another massive double header against Sweden, 2 games probably where you're looking, you know you probably need something out of them games, how do you close that gap in such a short time?
It's a tough question, because we're all going back to our clubs to play with our clubs, so the focus is going to be on the club for the next few weeks, but I'm sure we'll go over video again ourselves individually and see what we can do better individually, and then come into camp and review it as well with the staff and see where we can take it from there. But we just have to stay positive, and as I said, we we got to keep being good defensively, give up those kind of goals that are a bit not like us to concede, you know, and then get on the ball and try and score some goals.
Denise, is it a case of trying to bottle maybe that last half an hour performance, the fresh legs that came off, the likes of Leon Kiernan, obviously the long throws caused chaos in the England boxes. Is that really the positives you're going to try and take from the performance?
Yeah, definitely. The last 30 minutes of the game, it was a lot of us, a lot of Ireland. We got chances and the subs made a massive difference coming into the game. So they are the positives we need to take. We know what we can do, but we need to do it earlier, I think, and that's the way it is, yeah.
And the crowd was deafening when those chances came in. Yeah, when Kay McKay blocked Hampton's kick out as well.
I thought we had one there, yeah. Yeah, the crowd is absolutely fantastic, and it's amazing to see 32,000 fans come out. It just shows how far the game is going and how much the game's growing here. And yeah, we thank them and hope that they come out again.
And the fact it was on RT1 tonight, that was the main draw for football fans.
Fair play to Denise. I'm sure they'll bounce back in style. The ref's whistle has gone for halftime. Come back to us in the second half. We'll have some brilliant NFL chat as well as hearing from Shane Kingston to preview the Hurling Championship. To the Big Red Bench, Dan Casey in the hot seat for the next half hour. There's a very special NFL event taking place in the Woolshed tonight. Now, unfortunately, tickets are sold out, but earlier I had the privilege of speaking to its organisers, Michael McQuaid and Corkman Conor Mangan. Talk all things American football. Enjoy. We're delighted to be joined here on the Big Red Bench by Michael McQuaid and Conor Mangan. Lads, you're bringing the NFL to Cork. How did your own interest in the NFL first come about? Michael, we'll start with you here.
Thanks very much for having us on, Dan, and thanks everyone for listening in. I started supporting the NFL, just sort of watching it in college, and it sort of kicked off, I guess, in terms of doing stuff like this here around COVID. And just after COVID, we started doing events around Ireland and really trying to bring the game closer to people, whether you're from Cork or if you're up north or just wherever you are on the island. And yeah, it's our first time now having an event in Cork, and it's great to see so many, because there are so many fans in the county, so just great to see.
And Connor?
Yeah, Dan, how's it going? Thanks for having us on. Yeah, my initial interest actually came from going to an Ohio State Buckeyes game, which is a college team, if you believe it or not. So the lads don't get paid, but their stadium seats about 110,000 people. I went to a game, saw a bunch of lads hit a few balls, and I said, I bet you I could do this one day. I bet you I could do this. So fast forward a couple of years, I played rugby here in Cork in Old Christians, and I went to Christians secondary school there myself, and then went off to Canada and played a bit of professional rugby. And again, had the same thought to myself that it must be easier just to hit these footballs over instead of rugby balls and getting battered around the place. And yeah, that just kind of sparked my initial interest. And then kind of being over there as well, you're kind of a lot closer to everything. You're a lot closer to a bigger fan base, and then just kind of took off from there.
And Michael, how did Pro Football Ireland come about?
It was sort of dabbling in a different couple of things for a few years. And I think it was sort of the culmination of 4 to 5 years of doing different things, and we've seen a need for support for the NFL, for like what Connor said there as well, college football, and then also domestically. So it just sort of came under one umbrella, and around 18 to 24 months ago we set up, and it's just went to completely, you know, just different levels. And I know Connor will talk about even different aspects of the game itself here with kicking and different things as well. So it's around 2 years old, but you're looking at 5-6 years of sort of prep before that. So again, a couple of years old, and it's our first time here, so definitely excited as well.
Yeah, Neil Ryland, can you tell us a bit about him and the show tonight?
Yeah, Neil is the voice of the NFL for Sky Sports in the UK and in Ireland, but he's more not just on screen, but he's a journalist as well. So if you're a fan, it's highly likely you'll have seen him on TV over the last 10, 15, 20 years. So he's sort of the main guy, I guess, over the pond here. So delighted to have Neil over. He's done stuff for us in Dublin before. He was in Belfast last week, and he is very impressed with Cork so far. So it should hopefully be a good night.
Unreal stuff. I'm sure it will be. Can't wait to go myself. I suppose the main story kind of between Ireland and the NFL at the moment is Charlie Smith, County Down goalkeeper, getting signed. I mean, Conor, I'll go to you here. What an opportunity for him.
Yeah, how insane is it that out of the two international players that have gotten signed, they got signed on the same day, that one of them was Lewis Rees-Sammet, international rugby player, a Lion, massive personality, and then little Charlie Smith from Mayo Bridge in County Down, 22 years old. If that doesn't pique your interest, then you can stop listening right now. But if it does, keep on listening. It's absolutely insane. And Charlie didn't get there by chance. Didn't get there because it's a mad thing, because he's from Mayo Bridge. He hasn't even played a senior game in GA, to be honest. But he's a raw talent. And then on top of that, he's very, very dedicated, and you can tell that when you talk to him. It's something he loves. He's been watching NFL Red Zone since he's about 13 years old. I think this has kind of stuck by him, and he kind of knows what the standard was. And then with a lot of help from Tadhg Leader and Leader Kicking, kind of elevated his game. He got into this program. And here he is right now playing for the New Orleans Saints, and he's flying out there on the weekend and, competing for one of the top 32 jobs in the world.
Connor, you've been over there kind of going on this journey a bit with him, I suppose, in a way. What's the atmosphere like over there from talking to them, seeing what it's like in and around the NFL camps?
Yeah, well, I mean, I've been kind of touching base with him a lot. Obviously, being part of Leader Kicking as well, and in the combine itself, which it's very hard to even get invited to the combine, but then to perform well is another thing. And all the Irish lads did. So Rory performed quite well. Mark Jackson did. Dara Leader, and then Charlie as well. But it was kind of evident the morning of when all the NFL teams interviewed them that basically these four Irish lads, including actually Harry Malander, the English guy, they're all just quite impressive. First of all, they didn't have any rote answers like a lot of the college American guys did. They didn't have that kind of institutionalization with them. They were just, basically five elite athletes going into a room with a big presence on them. And they kind of gave the impression to all the NFL teams that I was talking to afterwards anyway, that they were just highly impressive by who the individuals were, and mm-hmm. that they're all athletes, and that they'd be able to kind of like deliver on a job. And so the kind of story going around with a bunch of teams is like, all right, well, who's going to sign who first? That was kind of the talking base for like the 2 weeks after the combine. And it was kind of like, we need to find out more information about these guys, but who's going to sign who first was kind of the main takeaway that I got from there.
Has that kind of fizzled out? I know there's still opportunity yet for Began and Jackson. Has that opportunity been missed, do you reckon? Michael, I'll go to you here.
I don't think so yet. I think, just very quickly on that, what Connor done at the combine and at the pro days was fantastic. And I know a lot of people, whether you're from Cork or not, would have seen that online.
Oh, it was everywhere.
Basically, the difference this year is teams can sign at any time. Last year, international players were literally assigned to a team, and that was usually done first couple of weeks in May. The draft is in 2 weeks' time. So, you're looking at guys like Rory Began, Mark Jackson, and Dara Leader as well. They still have a very good amount of time, and the season doesn't start to September also. There's 32 teams there. There's a number of different opportunities. And, I think it's really interesting because the guys have come home. We've seen Rory play last week. We know Mark is training with, his kicking and his punting, and he's also giving support to his county panel, which I think shows you the sort of lad he is. And I know these lads are highly motivated.
They had a great win.
They did, and I really don't think the window's closed for them yet. And I think like all of us, if you're a fan or not, I think we're all sort of pulling for them, and hopefully they can make it because they're pioneers at what they're doing. And I think for them to do this and to really put themselves out there is commendable, and it's really only the start,
Yeah,
Dan, if I can jump in just on that point there, I don't think the window is past them whatsoever. And the big reason why, and what a lot of people might not understand about the NFL is fans, and they might actually see it on draft day, because we watched draft day on Netflix there the other day. If you watch draft day, and all 32 teams put so much effort into the NFL draft every single year. Tons of money, tons of time, tons of effort. There's entire personnel departments dedicated to just the draft. As in, a team might have 10 different scouts just to be scouting people just for the draft, which all takes place in one weekend, which is in the end of April. So a lot of teams will not have their rosters set and will refuse to set their rosters until after the draft. And so a lot of them will be looking at Mark Jackson, they'll be looking at Rory Began, they'll probably be even looking at Dara Leader, although he kind of had some slight injury issues, but they'll be looking at all those three guys and be thinking, all right, once the draft's over, how do we slot these guys in? How do we make space for them? How do we make cap room for them? And do they fit our needs? So,
yeah. Have you ever given, yes, presume, Connor, you kick a ball yourself. Have you ever thought about giving it a go?
I do. I actually do kick. I kick at the moment with a team in Philadelphia called the Philadelphia Soul. So they're a professional indoor team. Last year was with the Arizona Wranglers. So I kind of made the move from rugby to that. I kind of went through the hard way. I didn't have a guy like Tyg Leader or even guys like Michael McQuaid to kind of promote me at the time. And there just wasn't that kind of avenue there for me. It's brilliant that it's here now. And, you know, I'm still kind of rocking the boat, so to speak, in the background as well. So I'm still hoping for the same opportunities as these lads. It's just incredibly exciting that they're able to go through this international pathway and kind of pave the way for, you know, a ton of other, like, GAA soccer and rugby guys in Cork and in Ireland that can go pursue this, you know.
Michael, I'll go to you here. I know there's a huge appetite, I mean, in Ireland, and you go to show it, I suppose, with your sold-out show in Cork tonight and everything like that. Do you think there'll ever be an NFL team in London, or possibly we might even see the Steelers here in Croker in the near future?
That's such a big question. I think probably around even 4 to 5 years ago, there was always a discussion around a team in London. I don't think that's going to happen now, because from next year you can have up to 8 games around the world, and they've got a game, for example, in Brazil on a Friday night this year to kick off. I think they'll do what Neil Reynolds has said, you know, previously at one of our events. They'll turn it into like a Formula One calendar and do games. Like, I'm saying this as a fan first and foremost, like, not with any affiliation. Like, I think it's a matter of time until we have a game. I don't know who will have it. Mm-hmm. I do think if it's in Dublin and in Croke Park, I would like to see places like Cork and like Belfast, for example, Parky Cueve, somewhere in Belfast at the minute. I'd like to see those areas also benefit from that, whether that's stuff during that
week. Hopefully Casement gets sorted as well, and that'll be a great venue.
At some point this decade, that would be nice, yeah. it's a really, really good time. And just to add on what Connor said a second ago, he's out there. He's on the ground in the US, and definitely if you haven't seen what he does, like some of his kicking and punting skills are unbelievable. So it's really the unknown in a positive way, and it's a really exciting time for him now over the next few months as well, because I think we'll get a game. You know, I think we'll get a game before the end of the decade. It's just a matter of who, when, and where, most likely Croke Park.
Connor?
Yeah. I mean, I can't emphasize that enough. I don't know why any team wouldn't jump on to the Irish bandwagon, so to speak. Mm-hmm. There's 75 million people in the United States alone that claim Irish heritage. So if you're talking 75 million there, you're talking 5.5 in this country, and then a bunch of people who want to be Irish. Let's just call that, off the top of my head, 3 billion. You know, you're talking 3.5 billion people who want to support the team. So if I was anyone, if I was the Pittsburgh Steelers, who have kind of, you know, been paving the way, but also the Jets and the Jags have also made a move into the Irish market. If I was any of those teams, you know, I'd be signing Irish kickers, and I'd be planning to have a game in 2026 in Croke Park, and I'd be selling it out. That's what I would do.
Is Patrick Mahomes better than Tom Brady?
No.
Michael.
Currently, maybe, but not of all time.
I agree with Connor. I think Brady's a good. He's the best of all time. Mahomes, though, could. I mean, the fact of his age, he could win up to 7. There's so much talent, and it's so unpredictable. You just don't know what's going to happen year on year, but he could definitely get there. But I think Brady stands tall with his age. I think Mahomes would have to go to 44, 45 for me.
Keep in mind now where you are. Who's the better athlete, Tom Brady or Patrick Horgan?
Patrick Horgan.
clearly. I've been saying this for the longest time.
Sorry. Yeah, definitely.
Who do you think is Patrick Mahomes is the best player at the moment?
I'm sure Connor might jump in after this, but for me, yeah, like, I think what he's done, he's elevated not only his team, but that like the league to a different standard. Like, we had the chance, Connor was there as well. We seen him in Frankfurt, and even just the way that he handles himself, I think speaks volumes. And also, he's had like a bit like Tom Brady in the past, he's had limited options sometimes, especially in offense, and he's just found a way to win. He obviously won the Super Bowl there last year and this year. So yeah, he's by far for me the best at the moment, and it's exciting to think that he hasn't even peaked yet, you know.
Connor.
All right, I'm going to come in with a hot take here, but Patrick Mahomes is not the best player in the NFL. I wish he was. I personally don't think it's all about the quarterback. I think they make a massive difference. Out of the quarterbacks, he's probably the best quarterback there is. As Michael said, he makes things happen when things definitely shouldn't happen. He has that X factor, that kind of Messi-esque-ness to him where, you know, something shouldn't happen. He shouldn't get past a couple of players. He shouldn't be able to make a pass, but he does. But the best player in the NFL is Christian McCaffrey of San Francisco 49ers, and that's hands down. He's the best athlete, he's one of the best persons, and I think he's the best player in the NFL. So there you go.
just to jump back to Tom Brady, I suppose my personal favourite player, what do you think makes Tom the person and the player he is? Connor, I'll stick with you here first.
I think there's a lot of factors to it. I think he kind of has everything going for him. I think it was probably a plus that he got drafted so late in the draft initially. You know, that footage has come up online there again, you know, when he was talking about getting drafted in the first place. And he was like, you know, thank God I don't have to sell insurance for a living. You know, that's my overwhelming feeling was I don't have to go back to a normal job. Like, I might actually be able to do this. And then, you know, fast forward 20 years and he's the greatest of all time. He's got 7 Super Bowl rings. He played in one of the greatest dynasties of all time. He's got a mental attitude that he kind of switched on in terms of like, all right, I'm not just going to focus on a mental game, not focus on a physical game, but I'm going to go down to diet, I'm going to go down to exercise, I'm going to make sure every part of my game is regimented that way. Because, you know, and again, kind of standing by him, oddly enough, is he's an absolute brutal athlete. Like, the man cannot really run, you know.
No,
he really can't.
He is not
quick. He's got the ankles of a cow. You know what I mean? Like, he can't. He wouldn't be doing much in that regard. But he's a fantastic passer. He's a great manager of the game. And you know, I think all those things, because you've got some of those negatives, it means you even try harder with your positives and your strengths. And he did exactly that, and he did it basically for as long as he can. And you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he gets a call up again from someone. I'm sure he has, but you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see him one more year in the NFL. Might not happen, but that's what I think makes him so great.
Michael, I mean, there's a fairly loaded answer there anyway.
I think I have to say that Connor completely covered that in the best way possible. I would love to see him again one more time. I think it's like everything in life. You don't really know what you miss until it's gone. Mm-hmm. And for him not to be there this year, I definitely missed him. Yeah, just in terms of what Connor said, like the TB12 method, the health, the routine, the nutrition, the guy literally had everything locked down. And you could see in his later years that he was just looking younger and younger. It was like Benjamin Button at one point. Just glad we got to see him. You know, like, I mean, people will ask about that in 20, 30 years' time. And yeah, he is, for me, yeah. No, nobody will ever be able to replicate that.
Once
my words. Come back to this in 20 years' time, this audio, when I say that. And, yeah.
Once in a lifetime stuff, to be fair. And I'm all under pressure for time. Connor, I'll go back to you here. Who and why is winning the Super Bowl next year?
Oh, that's a very tough question. I think it's going to be, I think the Texans have a fantastic chance just because they made so many strides last year. They remind me of the Detroit Lions a little bit, but then they've already loaded themselves in offseason this year. I'm excited to see what they do in the draft. They're an absolute brilliant team. Of course, the New Orleans Saints are going to be there because I heard they have a pretty good kicker from Mayo Bridge. But that's yet to be decided. We'll see what happens with them. Mm-hmm. Detroit Lions are going to be in the mix, and then I'd never rule out the 49ers again. I think they're going to sort out Brock Purdy, and again, if Christian McCaffrey is the best player in the NFL, which all three of us have established. I mean, if you're going to take my pick, you know, I'm going to go for the Saints because they've got Charlie Smith there. So Saints for the Super Bowl.
Wow, Michael.
I will say it short and sweet. I think after this year, a team that were one game away from the Super Bowl with a guy who's still a young quarterback, he's one of the best in the game. They've brought in Derrick Henry. I think the Ravens have stocked up. They're going to go in the draft and get a couple more guys to take them over the line. I think the Ravens win the AFC and get to the Super Bowl. And hopefully, we all pray. And, you know, obviously, Charlie Smith is with the Saints in New Orleans at the Super Bowl. Be unbelievable. Who knows?
Unreal. Lads.
In New Orleans. In New Orleans.
Yes, sir.
Lads, thanks so much for joining me. I'll see you in a while. I'll be at the event tonight, so I look forward to that. Should be a great one in the woodshed.
Thanks, my name, Dan. Thank you.
See you, Dan. Thanks.
Cheers. See you later, lads. Appreciate that. Brilliant stuff out of the lads there. Now to a bit of horse racing. Favourite I Am Maximus stormed to victory at the English Grand National earlier. All the horses came home safely in that one. A final burst under Paul Townend secured the win for trainer Willie Mullins. ahead of the 28th and one shot Delta Work. No, the jockey, the Cork jockey, I will add, says triumphing in the sport's biggest achievement at entry was something he always dreamed of as a child.
Every young boy does that has a pony. You look forward to Christmas as much for the presents as getting the Christmas tree afterwards and building the Grand National fence. And yeah, it's a unique race and it's a special race.
Now back to some football, and here's Eileen Gleeson speaking to Kathleen McNamee following the Republic of Ireland's women's 2-0 defeat to England at the Aviva.
We're disappointed. You know, the first half we were set up then to, you know, yeah, defend that lateral space and not let them play through us the goals. I think we could do better, you know, in those moments. But second half, I mean, I'm happy with that one. All right, and we're still learning about ourselves, and we know we want to be higher up that pitch, and we know we want to be super aggressive, but we need to find out, can we do that for 90 minutes against teams of this quality? So we have to try to control the game and manage it and stay in it for as long as we can. We didn't want to be going in a 2-0 down, but we were. But I thought the girls were tremendous in the second half, a lot of energy, and I think we put them to the test at points.
What is it that makes us come out in that second half and have the energy that we do? Because for most teams, it's you start off with the energy and it drops off, whereas we seem to have the opposite problem.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's even as a problem or how you frame it. It's more as like, how are we going to control the first part of the game so that we're in a position to come out and have a go in a later part of the game? That if we, you know, do we start like that and then you can't sustain it and you're opened up in the second half or your legs are gone, and then, you know, that's where you'll see like Leanne comes off the bench and she gives us a good run option, and then you try to affect the changes like that. But yeah, the girls, you know, really energetic, really aggressive. We see Caitlin came much more into it, and she's, you know, we're saying to her, you're much more when you're really on it instead of being passive in that defensive phase, and go on, be brave and push Aoife up and you engage a bit higher. So I think that's what we did in the second half, and yeah, we had a few chances there that you think, oh, go on, it's going to, but it doesn't happen. But yeah, we're learning all the time, and yeah, we're learning against the best in the world.
Well, it's not that long before they're all back in camp again, and we have to go again. It's already been quite a short turnaround time between Friday to today. Yeah. What for you and the team, what's the work over the next couple of weeks with not having the girls in front of you until they're back in camp, but to making sure that they come back in with the mental belief that we can go? Because it's one thing that both Caitlin and Denise mentioned to us was how mentally tough it was out there tonight, never mind the physical side.
Yeah, and I mean, like you said, we've played, what is it, second and third in the world in 3 days. It's tough physically, but it's tough mentally, and you know, we've been trying to manage that in the camp, managing the cognitive load as well as the physical load. But in terms of preparing then for Sweden, so we do a lot with individuals, so we'll do a debrief with individuals in between the camps, and then we'll have our approach ready for Sweden when the squad is finalised then. So yeah, it's trying to use the in between time as value without overloading them at their clubs. But yeah, it's difficult. You get 10 days, you get probably 4 training sessions where everybody is involved, and you've to embed a lot, and you know, you have to face the toughest opposition in the world. But I think the girls are up for it, and I think in their core they want to go with teams like this, you know, as we have to rein it in a little bit. But yeah, I think that's trying to manage it, and it's learning. We see different players, we see different characteristics tonight, and you know, we see again the impact of the bench, and you learn a lot about players. Totti for Mannion was great tonight, Patsy, Louise, like, you know, that whole kind of back line there was, you know, they were tough. We would have liked to get Denise on the ball a bit more tonight. I think she probably wanted to be on the ball a bit more tonight, she'd be like, but we're learning all the time. But I think there's progression, and now we need a result.
I mean, a little bit disappointed with the first goal, considering it's just the copy of the goal in Friday where the ball comes back across the box and they fire in from a close range.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's from a cross and not the set piece. But yeah, you're right, we're super disappointed with it, and we feel like, yeah, even if we're being passive, like, and you just keep those lines tight and you block out the true balls, and you're managing that, but then it's the ball in that you have to deal with. we have to deal with that better. So yeah, that's annoying.
When you go 2-0 down, they get a second penalty, obviously you miss it. The easy option then is just the floodgates to open and concede 5, 6 and 7. You must have been happy with the way the team just sort of settled back into it.
Yeah, I mean, I was definitely happy that third penalty, the second penalty didn't go in, because it's 3-0 is a lot different to 2-0, and you have to go in at half time and you have to try and keep it going. I mean, it's a tough ask of the girls, it's a tough ask of the staff and the whole team, but yes, thankfully we still lost. But you go in at 2-0 down and it's easier to stimulate the girls to come out and give you that second half performance. So yeah.
Now, with the Munster Hurling Championship just around the corner, we have a very special interview with Shane Kingston here. As title sponsor of the GAA Hurling All-Ireland Senior Championship, Ayr is bringing its new brand identity, Ayr for All, to the heart of Irish communities and GAA clubs this summer. Speaking at the official launch of the 2024 Ayr GAA Hurling All-Ireland Senior Championship season in Croke Park this week, Cork sharpshooter Shane Kingston had this to say about the season ahead.
Shane Kingston here at the launch for the championship. The Hurling Championship is around the corner. Ayr title sponsors once again. It's exciting times for Ayr.
Yeah, definitely. You know, as you said, we're up here in Croke Park for the launch of the championship. You know, it wasn't long coming around. It only felt like we were back training for pre-season there a couple of weeks ago, and all of a sudden championship now in a couple of weeks.
Do you feel like you're ready for championship, or would you like another few weeks?
I feel we're ready. You know, we've had a lot of training over the last number of months, a lot of games, I suppose it's all just to build up for championship. So, you know, looking forward to getting stuck into the games in the Munster Championship.
And when you look back at the league as a whole, what do you think Cork will take from it?
Yeah, I suppose every year you're looking for some positives to take from the league, but obviously there's negatives associated with any game. You know, there was a couple of games where we probably started a bit slower. You know, teams got a prolonged purple patch on us, so you know, that's something we've been working on over the last number of weeks, just to have to counteract that and things like that.
And you've quite a number of young players coming through as well. You obviously have the experienced lads in there too, but I'm sure it's nice to have the young players coming through, and sure pushes everybody on, and there's a lot of competition for places then too.
Yeah, definitely. You know, we probably have a few more players this year than we did last year. You know, most fellas are back from injuries, thankfully. But as you said, I suppose Cork have been involved in the last, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 of the under 20 and under 21 All-Irelands. So it's great to see those players kind of slowly coming through, with a mixture of a few older fellas. So it definitely makes for competition in both panel and the team.
And obviously your dad was in as manager. What is it like now, I suppose, not having him there? Does it take a bit of pressure off?
Yeah, I suppose it doesn't. Do you know, it was obviously, I was kind of used to it because I had him in 16 and 17 when he was involved, and then came back in 20, 21 and 22. There's definitely less tension.
In the house.
Yeah. But here, no, it's not much different really. Do you know, we tried to keep it in the GA environment as best we could. Obviously there was times where it filtered over into the household, but you know, it seems like a lifetime ago now when he was involved, so.
And I'm sure he's a good person then to be able to lean on now that he's not fully involved, that you can get advice and that from.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Do you know, I think he first got involved with Cork in 2012, I'm going to say. And then under 2013, then they had the All-Ireland and won a Munster then in 14. So I think he was involved maybe 8 out of the last 10 years until he finished up. So yeah, he obviously has a vast amount of experience, and you know, it's good for me to just get a bit of guidance and a bit of you know, help when it's needed.
And for Cork this year then, what does success look like? What would be a successful year in your view?
Well, I suppose just given last year we didn't get out of Munster, so you know, our first ambition is to get out of Munster. But you know, look, we haven't really thought about or discussed that too much. We're just focusing on the first game against Waterford down in Walsh Park, and you know, we're taking each game then as it comes.
For somebody that doesn't know anything about hurling, doesn't know anything about Munster Championship, how would you describe the Munster Championship?
Hectic. I like the competition in Munster is scandalous. I suppose we were only talking about it there earlier. In any of our last 3 games last year, all we needed was 1 point, and would have put us through. So I suppose that just shows how close the competition is, and you know, there's such small margins involved. It's just about getting on the other side of that this year.
And what is life like outside of hurling? Do you like to, I suppose, get away from it all as well and have a break?
Not really, I suppose. There's never much of a break, to be honest. And even if you do get a bit of a break, you're nearly getting bored because you want to get back at it.
Mm.
So I suppose realistically, it is your life while you're involved. So, you know, you just have to make the most of it when you are there.
Yeah, I was chatting with Conor Whelan there just about travel, and he said it is hard at times that he does like to get away and travel when he can. A lot of his friends are away. Is that something that you've ever wanted to do? Or?
Yeah, I've always said I like the idea of it, but I never really do it when it comes to it. I'd have that bit of FOMO, I'd be afraid on missing out on something back home. But obviously, I'm the same as anybody else. When I get the chance to head away for a week or two, I will. But you know, being involved with Cork is a privilege, so you want to kind of make the most of it while you're there.
Brilliant. Well, I have a quick fire round. You
yeah,
ready?
Go for it.
Okay. Who is the best player that you've played against?
I'm going to say TJ Reid.
I was going to say why, but I don't think you need to answer it, do you?
Speaks for itself.
Yeah. Do you think the All-Ireland final should be in July or September?
I suppose there's pros and cons to both. Having it in July is probably brilliant for a club player. But then if you're having it in September, the club season then is kind of coming into wintry conditions. So it is a tough one, but... Or I'll just go with July. Hopefully the weather's nicer.
Yeah, true. What is your favourite GA ground to play in?
Parkcleave.
Can't be in Cork.
Turles.
What is the hardest ground to go to?
There's a lot of them now, to be honest. Ennis maybe, or Gaelic grounds. I don't think we've had much success underage in the Gaelic grounds, so I'll say the Gaelic grounds.
What is one rule in the game that you change?
One rule. 2 points per sideline.
Nice.
Yeah.
What do you make of the rule that's just recently come in, that if you take your helmet off on the pitch, you have to go off for the next period?
I haven't really thought too much about it, to be honest. I suppose it's just a bit of a nightmare for fellas just fixing something with his eye and then he has to go off for a few minutes.
Or if you get injured and you want to take your helmet off to catch your breath.
Yeah, from that respect, it's probably challenging, but you know, it's probably taking out fellas taking their helmet off for no reason.
Has that been used as a tactic before for Cork?
Not for Cork, maybe for other opposition.
And finally, then, should GA players be paid? A nice easy one to finish.
Yeah, I suppose. Obviously it would be very nice. But then it probably brings in the question then what happens with your club. And I suppose the last thing you want to do is change the culture of the GA. But to answer your question, yes, I'd love if GA players were paid. It would make it a whole lot easier.
Wouldn't it just?
Yeah.
Shane Hinkson, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Great stuff. Thanks a million to all our contributors. Dan Casey signing off. You're on the Big Red Bench. Have a great evening. Stevie G is on the way next.